get the chance because of what happens next. And suddenly, I can hear again, but the only sound that makes its way into my eardrums is that of my own terrified voice still screaming, Tyler!
Chapter 29. Tyler. I don't know why I don't just throw fucking Carlos to the ground. Some sort of impulse, I guess. Maybe I'm remembering Nadir again. I wouldn't let him just crash down, so I don't let Carlos go either. Fucking feelings. It ain't easy. Logan's really going all in on this bat thing. Maybe he's working out unfulfilled dreams of being a major leaguer, who knows. All I know is that the shit hurts, and I'm not sure how much more I can take. I get Carlos on the blacktop, and I do the only thing I can do. I try to wait it out. One of two things will happen. Either Logan will get tired and quit, or he'll break my back and kill me. There is a third thing, I guess. He could just get bored and shoot me in the head, but my gut tells me at this point homeboy's way more interested in making me suffer for a while than he is in just killing me. Fuck! I find myself yelling, and not in a nice way. And that's when I glance over and catch a glimpse of Maddie. I see her poking her head from by the tire where Ricky has stashed her, and for which I am grateful. I think I may have been wrong to mistrust the guy so much. Maybe he's not a bad dude after all. Fuck! And there's that bat again. Shit. I don't think I'm gonna make it. I kinda laugh at that. In between getting hit and listening to the hellfire of bullets and whatever shit Logan's screaming at me in Spanglish. Of all the shit I've ever been through, I never thought this would be the way I would die. In love, I mean. Because I never thought I would be in love. Just didn't seem like it was in the cards for me. But here I am. In love. And in big fucking trouble. It's okay. I don't mind. I'm not scared or anything. I'm just sad. Because I think I might actually have liked being happy. It didn't seem so bad. Some people change when they fall in love. I've seen it. Sometimes for better and sometimes for worse, but when it's right, when it works, when it's good, it doesn't change you. It makes you more you. It's like that with Evan now that he's with Robert. He's always been the best guy, but there's a light that shines off him now. I wonder if it was like that with me these last few weeks. Was I lighter? Was I a better version of myself? I think I was. I think I was. Yep. I can feel it coming. My old, battered, beaten, scarred, mangled body has served me well, but I don't think it's got a whole lot left to give here. I've always thought that the body was just a tool and that if the mind was willing, the body would find a way to push through whatever pain it was feeling and move on. But that's simply not true. If that was true, Scotty would be alive today. He had more will and strength of character than anybody I've ever known. His body just couldn't respond. And he had to let go. There's no shame in it. It's okay. I don't want to leave Maddie, especially since I just found her, but it's starting to look like I may not have a choice. All this whips through my mind in less than a fraction of a second, and as Maddie disappears behind the tire for safety, I decide that the only thing for me to do now is to try and transport my mind out of here so that my body can let it all happen and not feel guilty about it. And while I'm letting myself drift off, I will think of Maddie. I will think of her safety and her protection and her happiness and her joy. I remember us as kids, birthday parties and holidays and Christmases. way better ones than this one. And I think again about seeing her at Pete's for the first time. An angel fallen from wherever. Because she is. She is to me. And I try to imagine her old and happy and over me. Maybe moved on with a new guy who can give her what she deserves. Someone who'll love her the way I wanted to. And I'll just become a footnote. A long forgotten someone that she knew for a little while and thought was kind of okay. Someone she saved. Someone she healed. Someone to whom she brought peace. And I can see that life for her. I see it in my mind as clearly as I see the blood I'm starting to cough up. And I know it's real. I know she's going to be all right. She'll be safe. She'll be saved. And if my life is the cost for that, so be it. I'm so, so, so very honored to be able to pay it. Thank you, Angel. Thank you for everything. I'm sorry it all worked out this way. But it's okay. I love you. I'll see you again. And that's when the explosion happens. It's like a fireball exploding from somewhere deep inside the suddenly molten earth. It puts a hard stop to everything else that's happening right now. It blows both me and Logan back about 10 feet. The shooters, too. It roils up and swoops over us like the devil himself is spitting at us in anger and frustration. Like he's pissed that we're disturbing his rest. Maybe he's just trying to wait for Santa, too. The flames are all around us, in both great sweeping waves and in tiny standalone puddles. What the fuck just happened? Doesn't really matter, as two of the shooters have turned and started to run back into the house slash mansion slash hotel slash whatever the hell, but are confronted by billowing smoke. Huh. I guess Maddie's little decoy fire must have gotten out of control in there. Shooter one and shooter two break left and take off around the side of the property and go running for the beach. The other shooters are burning alive. The flames catch them either by the rapid way it's creasing a path along the gas-soaked concrete or in tiny fireballs that continue to spark and shower down all around us. I can't see through the fire in front of me. I can't tell if Maddie is okay. I can't tell if Ricky is either, but I care a fuck ton less about that. I can see that Carlos is still unconscious, lying right in the pathway of the spreading inferno. Logan is lying next to me, where we were blown back, and it looks like he's trying to stand up. I am, too. The difference is that his bat is resting next to me now, and I can take it up and use it as a staff to help me get to my feet. So I do. And look, it's not cool, and it's not classy, and I'm not super proud of it, but I bring it down hard one time on Logan's stomach, and he whines like the little twat blossom he is. And again, not proud or dignified, but it feels fucking good. What does not feel fucking good is everything inside my own body right now. But Carlos is still there, and God damn it, I gotta fucking get him up before he's caught by this still baffling eruption that keeps growing in our direction. I race over to get hands on him, but as I do, another eruption of fire sends me back. Where the fuck is this coming from? I go in again and manage to get my hands on his wrists. The screaming of the other guys who are being burned up is super distracting. I know it'll stop in a second, but for now, it's making it hard to focus. I turn my head for the briefest of seconds and see Logan, now unconscious, and realize that I'm probably not going to be able to get them both. It's wild. The fire has spread in almost like a semicircle around us. A literal ring of fire. Like the Johnny Cash song. I fell into a burning ring of fire. I went down, 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 and the flames went higher. Only less fun, and without Johnny's sonorous baritone to bring it along. Nobody could get to us if they tried, and I don't see any way out of this except back towards the ocean, where I know for a fact guys with guns have just skedaddled. Or through the burning fucking ring of fire. And then I realize This is like my dream. The dream. In that dream, I had to run through fire and burning flesh to reach my angel. But also, of course, in that dream, she blamed me for everything bad that had happened. Are Maddie and I through that yet? If I run through this, are we through with that? The suffering and the pain. Could this be the last trial for us? Shit, man. Let's fucking find out. I eeny, meeny, miny, moe it to decide if I'm going to try and drag Carlos or Logan out with me. Ultimately, Carlos wins, which is fair. Carlos is who Ricky wants to take down. Logan is just a dipshit I want to punch in the dick over and over. So I go in one last time and reach for Carlos. I get him, drag him up, and, with an unreal amount of physical discomfort, I sling him over my shoulders and see if I can find even a sliver of something that looks like a way of egress through the flames. And I really wish I hadn't taken that extra second to try and figure it out, because in that moment of hesitation, another explosion. I have no idea where this one emanates from, but it's a fucking doozy. It sends me back on my ass and causes me to drop the shit out of Carlos. I look up at the clear, starlit sky and begin howling with laughter. Yeah, it's weird, I know, but it's what I do. And then I look over and see that Carlos is now engulfed in fire. He's still out cold, so he doesn't know it, and I'm glad of that. Getting burned alive is... well, there's no one on the planet who doesn't have an idea of how horrifying that is. Until you've seen it, there's no way to even begin to really understand, but it's bad. Am I sad that Carlos is leaving this mortal coil right now? Nah, not really. Just being real with myself. He was a bad dude, and the world will be a better place without him. Plus, he repeatedly terrified and hurt the woman I love, so, yeah, fuck him. But am I glad he's being spared a painful death? Yeah, I suppose I am. Because, shit. I guess because there's enough suffering in the world, I don't know. I ain't no philosopher, I'm just me. But these are the thoughts I'm thinking as I watch him turn to ash. Logan, on the other hand, yeah, I wouldn't mind sticking around and watching that cocksucker get barbecued. But I have to see if Maddie is still whole on the other side of this flame tsunami, or whatever the fuck it is. I'm not thinking right and out of words. Oh, and also, I just realized that my shirt is on fire, so I need to get the fuck out of here. There is no way around it I can see, except to just go straight through. I don't know how deep the wall is because I can't see past it, and I don't know if by running straight ahead I'm just guaranteeing myself a grisly fucking end. But if Maddie is there on the other side, then it'll be worth it. Because I don't know what waits for us down the line either. But I know the only way to find out about that is also by just running headlong into it. Shit. That worldview got me this far. Whatever, motherfucker, you're on fire. Make moves. Okay, on three. One, two, oh, fuck it, go. And forward. Into an unknown fate, I flamingly charge. Here, that's Ricky. He's holding a bottle of water and a Vicodin. I take the water, I wave off the Vicodin. You're gonna want something for the pain. You work for the DEA and you're giving me a Vicodin? It's not illegal. Yeah, well, maybe you guys should take a look at that. And anyway, I'm gonna try and lay off the scripts for a while and see how I do. Okay. He says. But you should probably get x-rays when you get home. X-rays, sex rays, I say. Which doesn't make sense, but makes Maddie smile. We'll be at McCarran pretty soon if you guys want to try and sleep. I wave that off too. I'll sleep when I'm dead. There are so many different ways everybody could respond to that nobody says anything. How much trouble are you in? I ask him. Ricky shakes his head, takes a sip of his own water. Dunno. Brought in an untrained civilian to a deep cover-up, burned down the estate of our target while simultaneously allowing him to suffer a fatal injury, thereby totally sandbagging years of work and millions of taxpayer dollars? If I was a congressman, I'd say I'd get off scot-free, but I'm just the guy putting his life on the line every day, so... probably pretty fucked. We'll find out. He smiles. He should smile more. It's nice. Well, sorry, I say. It's all good, he says back. He's wrong. It's nowhere near all good, but I get it. Emily, Ricky's little sorority cohort, comes walking down the aisle of the Cessna.
Agent Martinez, the assistant director is on the phone for you.
Ricky raises his eyebrows at me. Yep, guess we'll find out, he sort of sings, and then heads to the front of the plane to take his call. As he passes by Emily, their fingers touch. I think. Pretty sure. Not 100%, but whatever. That's them.
You doing okay?
That's Emily asking Maddie. Maddie nods. Emily gives her a small grin, gives me one, and heads toward the cockpit herself. Maddie and I are facing each other. I've taken a few chartered flights. The facing each other thing is like my favorite part. I don't know why. Feels old-timey. Like you're on the Orient Express or something. Except you're in the sky, and usually there isn't some mysterious murder to solve. Usually. Maddie's sitting back looking out the window. It's still dark out. It won't be light for a couple more hours, so she's basically only seeing her reflection. I can't blame her. If I saw that in the mirror looking back at me, I'd look at it all the time. What you thinking about? I ask. She turns her head to me, leans in, takes my hand in hers, looks at our intertwined fingers, smiles. Nothing, she says. She's still wearing my watch. Nadir's watch. What time is it? I ask. She glances at it.
I don't know, she says. It stopped.
Really?
I look at it. She's right. It did.
It seems like it stopped almost exactly 3 hours ago. Would have been right around the time I was trying to save Carlos, I think. Honestly, I'm not sure. I decide not to think about it too much. Instead, I just hold her hand in mine and decide that the only thing I'm going to think about is this moment. This one. Right here. Right now. In the present.
Chapter 30. Maddie. What I saw when he came charging through that curtain of flame was impossible. It was terrifying. It was in competition to become the worst moment of my life, because there was simply no way he could survive. The fire was too out of control, the burning wall too thick to break through, the wrath of the inferno too savage to overcome. But he did. He did break through. He did overcome. He just ripped off the burning shirt he was wearing, smacked it on his legs to put it out, ran over to me and said, "Hi. Tyler fucking Morgan." And so, I don't know how to tell him that what I'm thinking about now is that I prayed for him. Not to any god or spirit or whatever, but for him. For him and me. For us. And that it may just have worked. I don't tell him because I don't know if I believe it myself. It's too out there to be believed. If I tell him that I was imagining us old and together and still in love and... nope, not gonna say it. It's weird. It's crazy. And we've had enough weird and crazy, so I'm just gonna let this shit sit for now. I do have a question, though. Ty?
Yeah, babe?
That explosion. The fire.
Yeah?
What was that? He takes a sip of his water and nods his head back and forth. He winces a bit. I don't give a shit whether he wants it or not. He's getting fucking x-rays.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Tyler?
Yeah, I don't know. I've been trying to figure it out. I don't know.
Well, we were standing on top of that whole fueling thing. Maybe one of the bullets started a... He shakes his head.
Nope. Come on, babe. You've never seen Mythbusters?
No, what's that?
Show on TV. Fucking awesome. But no, that's bullshit. movies and shit when something gets blown up by getting shot? No way. There's oxygen and surface area and heat diffusion and... No, not possible. Okay, so what caused that? I have no earthly idea. I've been studying this shit my whole life, and I was thinking maybe the fire you started inside might have somehow done something to a fuel line that, in turn, was connected to the fuel reserves under the filling station, but... I don't know. None of it makes sense. Sure did blow the fuck up, though. Yeah, sure did. I look back out the window to reflect on this, but I find that I can't. And you saw Carlos die? He nods. Was it... Don't, babe. He interrupts. It's... Don't. He's gone. And no, honestly, it wasn't that bad. I can say with absolute confidence that he didn't feel it, okay? I nod absently. Then, Logan? Tyler sighs. I didn't see him go. But he was unconscious, and then it was all spreading his way, and... I don't know what to tell you, Mads. I was on fire and shit. I wasn't at my clearest level of thinking. But the point is, even if he somehow survived, which there's no way he did, it's done. This chapter of your life is over, okay? I promise. I nod, a bit less than certain. He leans forward and takes my hands again, wincing the whole time. You're getting a goddamned x-ray.
Okay, whatever, fine, just listen.
He looks into my eyes and holds my gaze. We are going to leave the past in the past, okay? And I mean all of it. New Year's is less than a week away, yeah? Okay, so I'm giving us exactly 6 days to take care of any unresolved bullshit that we need to take care of, so that we can start the new year fresh and ready for whatever's next. Oh, you're giving us 6 days? Like, that's what you're doing? Is that, like, an order, or...
Don't be a dick.
He slaps at my knee.
You know what I mean. There's some shit I gotta handle, and I wanna get it out of the way and be done. And if you can too, then... Super. But hey, look, if you wanna keep being kinda miserable, be my guest. It's a good look on you.
I grin. Fucker. Then I reach up and tug at his beard. This... Is this one of the things we're putting behind us? Because I would be more than happy to see this shit gone.
What? Are you crazy? I can't shave that. I'm like Samson. My strength is in my beard.
Yeah, well then, I may just have to Delilah the shit out of you while you sleep.
Damn, you is a cold woman.
I laugh, lean forward, pressing onto his knees to support myself, and give him a long, well-earned kiss on his silly mouth. Then I sit back and look out the window again. I start giggling a little. I can't help it.
What? What is it?
He asks. And now my giggle turns into a chuckle, and my chuckle into a laugh, and before I know it, I'm full-on belly laughing and snorting, which makes him laugh too.
Ow! Ow! He says, laughing and holding his ribs. Stop. It hurts. What are you laughing at?
I let the laughter slow to a snicker again. Breathe in, let it out, take a long look at him and say, I don't know, I was just thinking, if this was Christmas, I can't wait to see what fresh hell New Year's Eve is gonna bring. As it leaves my lips, we both crack up all over again, and as Tyler grabs at his side and begs me to stop making him laugh, I smile a big smile, glance out the window one more time, and quietly whisper to whatever mysterious force controls the universe. You know I'm only joking, right?
You have been listening to Flesh into Fire, Book 3 of Original Sin, produced by Greg Lawrence. Associate Producer Emily Durr. Text copyright 2018 by J.A. Huss and Jonathan McLean. Production copyright 2018 by Oh My Audiobooks. All rights reserved. If you enjoyed this audiobook, let us know. Take a quick moment to rate and review it on Audible so we know we're bringing you audiobooks you'll love.
End of bookshit. Julie. We're three joint EOBSs in, and Jonathan hit this one out of the park, yes? I loved it when he sent it to me. We kind of came up with a vague idea of doing these on hope and salvation, and since his is filled with thoughts of hope, I'll fill mine with thoughts of salvation. because that's really what this book was about. Maddie was after revenge, and I get it. I think everyone gets it. We've all wanted revenge at one time or another in our lives. But I think back on the one time I really did get revenge and how it all happened, and it was really nothing more than karma, you know? You reap what you sow, plain and simple. I felt vindicated when all was said and done, but I didn't put anything in motion to get that result. It all just kind of played out. The desire for revenge usually happens like this. You decide to trust someone. You let down your guard. You give them the benefit of the doubt and figure since you play by the rules, everyone else does too. And then they go and do something really mean, which, and this is the worst part, you weren't really expecting because you trusted them. So they did something really nasty, something that just hurt you in your core, and they won. Whatever that prize was that they were after, that you had, because let's face it, some people like to take instead of earn, they got it in the end. Which is what really hurts, that this person you loved or trusted or cared for decided you were worth less to them than the object of their desire. It's sobering. It's also debilitating, and so this is how revenge pulls you in, right? You think, maybe I can get back what I lost. But if you lost that thing because they took it from you, then fuck it, right? You earned it once, you can earn it again. It's far easier to just let go. I'd love to tell you my amazing revenge story, but I'm not gonna, because the people involved don't deserve a place in my EOBS. I will tell you this. It was quite diabolical, but I swear to God, I really had nothing to do with it. It was all karma. So when I finally realized it actually was revenge, it felt pretty good. But more importantly, it was freeing, because I didn't do it on purpose. It kind of made me feel like good triumphs over evil, and as long as I can stay on my true path, be honest, and do my best, I'd be okay. Even though in real life, it's the liars and the cheats who seem to win the most. I will tell you this as well. I think if I let myself go down a path of revenge, I turn into a really terrible person. Because I think I'm capable of a lot more than people give me credit for, and not in a good way. I think if I wanted to fuck someone's life up, I could. Pretty fucking bad, too. And I'd get away with it. It would all be legal. I'm just kind of twisted like that. So I keep that part of me restrained to book plots. So Maddie lost something she cared about. Carlos and Logan not only took Pete from her, but Pete as well. But on a deeper level, what they really took was the tenuous peace she found at the strip club and with Pete. They rocked her world in the worst possible way, and she wanted payback with a capital P. But I don't think she got payback at all. I think she got salvation. I think back on my revenge, and I think I got salvation as well. Because that outcome was the first step in letting go of people who were holding me down and allowed me to move forward. I think a win every now and then is important, and that's what Maddie's looking for in this story. She just needed a win. And even though this is cliche, I'm going to say it anyway. Winning isn't everything. Winning means you achieve something, maybe the highest something. But unless your life is over after that win, there's still something more to achieve. Maddie made some dubious choices for sure, but not because of the devil on her shoulder. Just because she was lost. And that's what the next and final book is about, Maddie and Tyler finding their peace. Also, and this is the true point of the EOBS, salvation comes from forgiveness. Maddie didn't need to forgive Carlos or Logan, so that wasn't her problem. Yeah, they were assholes and they did bad things, but they weren't dragging her down. She was dragging herself down. So she needed to forgive herself, not them. And once you can forgive yourself for not being perfect, it's like a whole new world opens up. Because once you let go of the idea that you have to be perfect, you allow yourself to make mistakes. And when you allow yourself to make mistakes, you learn things. I wrote a blog post about imposter syndrome last December. It was part of my top 5 tips for authors that I was doing on my website. And I said in that post that I never felt like an imposter as a fiction writer, even though I have no training. I never took a writing class, and even though I have 2 college degrees, they were in science, not writing, or English, or literature. But before I wrote fiction, I wrote nonfiction. And that was all science stuff, which is my thing, right? It was workbooks for kids on things like anatomy and physics and the life cycle of a butterfly. And when I wrote that stuff, interestingly enough, I did feel like an imposter, even though I had 2 science degrees and one of them was a master's. So when I published these, I was self-published even back then, I'd be so stressed out about making typos because I would be judged. I didn't have an editor. There was no way I could afford an editor back then. So everything that went out was all on me. I felt like a reflection on me as a person and my brain too, because it was nonfiction. So I was being judged on my actual knowledge and what I knew of the natural world. And every once in a while, I'd find a typo after I published and it would stress me out pretty bad. I'd feel stupid and small and quickly fix it before anyone noticed and sent me an email telling me I needed an editor. But after a while, I realized, you know what? I'm not fucking Scholastic, okay? I'm not some big textbook company. I'm a fucking single mom working from home just trying to pay the bills. But once I cut myself some slack and allowed myself to be imperfect, I felt a whole lot better about things. I did better work. Letting go of the imposter feeling and allowing myself to make typos in a finished product actually led me to making better courses and spending that time learning new things. So by the time I got to writing fiction, most of that imposter bullshit was in the past. I know I have some typos in my books, maybe not the series. Jonathan is much better at finding typos than I am. But in my solo books, they're there. I have an editor and I have proofers, but again, I am not Random House. I am not Simon & Schuster. I am not HarperCollins. I'm J.A. Huss. Just one person sitting out here in the middle of nowhere, Colorado, doing my thing. I do my best to catch all the typos, but I choose to spend my time writing stories instead of pretending I'm perfect. And I think that's part of my success, to be honest. What good are perfectly spelled words if the story sucks? I have never felt like an imposter as a storyteller because I don't think storytelling and editing have much to do with each other. Yes, everyone wants a clean manuscript, but there's an acceptable level of imperfection allowed in my work, and that's all there is to it. So back to Maddie and her issues. The other half of her problem was that she attributed all her failures to herself. She blamed herself for everything when in truth, sometimes things just happen. Both good and bad. Sometimes shit just happens. And there's nothing you can do about it except roll with the punches. Sure, she has to take some responsibility, but when you blame yourself for all the bad things in life, you miss out on the bigger picture. Which is, you are here to learn something. Something about yourself. Something about people or about the world around you. And you can do that a million different ways. You can help people. You can go to school. You can be a teacher. You can become a doctor. You can become a scientist. You can write books. You can raise kids. You can take care of your elderly parents. You can cook new things. You can go new places. You can take pictures or draw or play music or make jokes or analyze movies or be a motivational speaker or help. Just drive a different fucking way to work every week. There's an endless number of ways to learn. But the best way to learn is to make mistakes. I think back on my success and you know what I remember most? All the times I fucked it up. And you know why I remember those times the best? Because in fucking up, I learned something new. How to do better next time, hopefully, but also that there is a next time. I think back on my biggest successes in books, and I have no clue why those books sold so well. Like, none. But you know what I remember about the books that didn't sell well? All the mistakes I made, so I can try and fix them the next time. And in making mistakes and fixing things, you realize who you are as a person. You cultivate a story about what it means to be you, what you want, and how to get there. Which was how Maddie saved herself. This book is all about accepting herself for who she is and allowing herself to move forward. It wasn't about kicking Logan's ass and taking Carlos down. It wasn't about allowing Tyler back into her life. It wasn't her quest for the perfect business. It was her quest for self that saved her. What it actually meant to be Maddie Clayton. That's why she agreed to put herself in danger. She didn't do it for revenge. She did it because she couldn't live with herself if she looked the other way and left the mess for someone else to clean up later. Taking responsibility for something you don't have to but need to and forgiving yourself for the mistakes you've made is what leads to salvation. She learned she had limits, she had courage, she had convictions, and she came to understand the most important lesson of all. It's not the typos that define you. It's the story. J.A. Huss, 3/19/18.
End of book shit. Jonathan. Let's talk about hope for a second. I once had someone tell me that it seemed cruel to encourage patients with severe spinal injuries, paraplegics notably, to believe that they could walk again. This turned into a broader conversation about chronic illness, terminal illness, and the like.
The position being offered to me was that to encourage someone with virtually zero odds of recovery from injury or malady to believe that they could return to full form was just giving them false hope. For the purposes of what I'm talking about here, I'll choose to overlook the notion that recovery is in and of itself a fallacy. Moments once past cannot be recovered, nor can one retrieve one's health, youth, or previous state of mind. Whatever form one currently occupies is one's full form, and to resist the given circumstances of a state of being is to exist in conflict with that state, which further reinforces individual suffering. But I digress. Here was my argument in return. All hope is false hope. So why not just choose to believe? By which I mean that until something is proven true or happens, it isn't real. So relative to the now, there is no likely future. It simply doesn't exist. I mean, I hope I get to the end of this sentence, but there are no guarantees. Oh, good. I did get to the end of it. Nice. I'll keep going then. And so, given that lack of even the vaguest possibility that we can know what's going to happen as time continues passing, why not just choose to believe that the future can be the thing you want it to be? Because if you can grasp hold of that belief, you stand a chance of making the now a little more tolerable. Here's where it gets tricky. You also have to let go of the now. You have to see this moment as just an ephemeral blink of the universe's eye that has absolutely nothing to do with you, not take whatever is happening personally, and move on to whatever the next moment is that also has nothing to do with you. And this goes both ways. If you are sad now but have been happy before, there is a reasonable chance that you will find cause to become happy once again. Obviously, the inverse is also true. Joy and suffering are byproducts of the thoughts we think. And the thoughts we think are just tools we use. If the tools you are using are not accomplishing the job you want them to accomplish, you may want to investigate getting new tools. Note: I grew up in a home with a mentally ill parent. My mother is a diagnosed paranoid schizophrenic who also suffers from bipolar disorder and potentially a whole other raft of issues. Hard to know for sure, as mental illness creates a paradigm in which it's tough to determine what is an accompanying illness and what is just a fabrication of the prevailing illness. But my point is that my mother is simply not equipped with enough working tools to make the repairs on herself we would all like for her. And she's also not really in a position to acquire new tools. So my whole premise is based on a certain foundational assumption of mental ability and capacity. But even in bringing up the idea of my mom, I can tie it to the concept of hope. Because for years, I hoped that there was some way she would get better or return to some version of the mother I vaguely remember from when I was very young before she became recognizably ill. And the hope that she would drove me fucking crazy. Because it wasn't actually hope. It was desire. I desired that she would become different or function differently or behave differently. And I desired that because it would make me feel more comfortable. Which is fine, of course. I was a kid and shit. I hadn't yet worked out all the ways I think about things. But as I became an adult, I still held on to some of the feelings I had about what I wanted until I began to accept that it just wasn't going to work out the way I wanted it to. And that was when I changed my perception of what I hoped for. I began to hope instead for little things. Like, I hoped that if I got her on the phone on this day, that she would be having a good day, without torment and at peace. Or hell, forget a good day, even that she would have a good couple of moments. And I hoped this for her, obviously, but I also still hoped it for me. There is a certain level of self-interest that is actually required in being a compassionate person. As they say, put on your own oxygen mask first, before helping others. The characters in these books are driven by hope. They don't realize it, of course, but they are. As are we all. If we weren't, we would just give up. In whatever way you take that to mean, stop getting out of bed, quit our jobs, commit suicide, whatever. I realize there is an argument to be made that sometimes we just keep moving forward by habit and momentum, and there's no hope to be found. But I would argue in return that just because you don't feel hopeful doesn't mean it isn't baked in. In the climax of this book, when things look bleak for Tyler and Maddie, ultimately it is their hope that gets them through. That they are saved from death is not the point. It's that both of them, in that moment, give over to a certain kind of acceptance while at the same time hoping for the outcome they desire. Their acceptance looks different to each of them, but their hope is the unifying force that keeps them going. In the first book, Sin With Me, there is the sentence, "Fear implies hope." Tyler thinks that in the first chapter, meaning, of course, that if you feel afraid, it's due in part to the fact that you are still hopeful that whatever is threatening you won't harm you or kill you or harm or kill someone or something you love. His presumption is that once you've given up hope, you no longer have to feel afraid. But what he hadn't learned yet is that acceptance and hope are not mutually exclusive. You can accept the reality of a negative circumstance and still remain hopeful that the circumstance can change. Same goes for Maddie. She struggles in the first couple of books because of how much she's hoping for a better life, but the struggle isn't born of the hope. It's born of her lack of acceptance of where she is then. She struggles, he fights, but they are both just hoping for peace. In this book, we hope we have brought these two that much closer to it. As for my own hopes, they are many. But as relates to you and me, dear listener, my dear listener, when I took this project on with Julie, I hoped very much that we would wind up making something that might accomplish a couple of things. One, I wanted to write stories that people would want to read. Two, I wanted to try and say something about the world and our place in it. It seems to me that romance is kind of the perfect platform to try and achieve both of those goals. Romance readers are, by and large, excited and enthusiastic to get their hands on new stories. If you've gotten this far, presumably you are one of those enthusiastic readers. And stories of love, happiness, and hope are the ones that I'm interested in telling. I realize that what Julie and I are doing with this series is both in keeping with norms of the genre and at the same time somewhat apart from those norms, and I also realize that as a result we may put off some readers. But I hope that anyone who discovers these books will find in them something that is special or identifiable or meaningful. I hope that anyone who reads these books will either love them or hate them, because indifference to art is, in my opinion, the greatest of all creative tragedies. I hope that therefore we have created a reaction in you that is strong and affecting and that stays with you after the last word has been tucked away in that magnificent toolbox you keep inside your head. I hope you'll return with us for the fourth book to see what becomes of Tyler and Maddie as they continue on their journey. And for you, I hope good deeds, a life as free from suffering as is possible, and kindness and compassion accompany you on your own journey, as long and as far as that journey may take you. Hopefully. J.M. 12th of March, 2018.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.